Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. This is the second Friday of the month, and that's the day we'll be setting aside to answer your questions on lawn and garden care. Sandy Mason will be our regular guest for these programs throughout the spring and summer. She's a horticulture expert with the University of Illinois Extension and a regular panelist on Mid-America Gardener Thursday nights on WILL-TV. Sandy, welcome back to Focus.
Thank you.
And joining us on the phone is master naturalist Sherry Snyder, here to talk with us about using native plants. Sherry is the president of the Illinois Prairie Chapter of Wild Ones. That's a group promoting the use of native plants in the U.S. Sherry, welcome to Focus.
Hi, Jim. Happy to be here.
And maybe I can start a question for you. Tell me about how you first you developed your own interest in the use of native plants.
Well, about 5 or 6 years ago, my husband and I moved out into the country and into a natural wooded area and decided at that point that it probably wasn't a good idea to bring in some of the potentially invasive ornamentals. So at that point, I did a whole bunch of research and decided I was going to plant everything native in my yard. So I'm still in the process of getting there. I still have a lot of hostas. and some other plants, but I'm well on my way to planting all natives in the yard.
What's the rewards you feel?
The rewards? Oh, my. Well, for one, the beauty of the plants. Also, the nature that it brings into my yard. I love watching the goldfinches pick the seeds out of the seed heads in the fall. I love watching the butterflies. I can sit in my front yard and just watch the butterflies dancing across the flower tops. It's very relaxing.
Well, we'll be welcoming your lawn and garden questions about all sorts of plants, native and otherwise, on Focus today. Call in at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. You can also reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter at Focus, at Focus 580. Phone numbers again, 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. Let's go to our first caller of the morning from Belgium, Illinois. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Yes, good morning to you all. Ms. Mason, about 20-some years ago, I got a piece of property, and I've let it go into habitat. It's been that way for, like I said, a long time. And last year, late last summer, I acquired another 7 acres right beside this. And on this property, my entire property has a stream that runs through it, so it's kind of low. And this property, that portion of that property, part of it I'd like to be habitat, and the other part, the wife and I decided maybe we ought to grow a little something to feed ourselves on. And this property was tilled as farm property 50-some years ago. In the intervening time, it's been, had horses on it and different things like that. And we're wondering, just how do you get started with making a garden? I mean, when you go from something that, now, that hasn't been turned for a long time, and also to protect from all, I have a lot of deer, mm-hmm. a lot of rabbits, and a lot of squirrels and foxes and everything else. So I'm trying to protect it from, you know, the predators, so to speak. And I thought maybe turn a larger area and put a couple fences around it, one inside, outside, put a big dog in between. I don't know.
Sounds like a fortress.
Well, yeah.
So you're looking at, what, vegetables and fruits both, probably?
Yeah, I already have a bit of an orchard on the other piece of property, mm-hmm. but I'd like to just have vegetables, you know, maybe fruits like strawberries, but not, you know, trees or anything.
Well, I think you've hit upon the one thing, because obviously you're in these areas where you are going to have deer and rabbits and stuff, and so you do have to kind of think through that. And, you know, there are obviously some repellents and stuff you can use, but you also hit upon just the fact that generally those are with high populations of deer or rabbits, those generally don't always work all that great. So I think thinking through a fence issue, I think, is one thing for you. And so I think that's probably just it's just going to be something you're just going to have to do if you want to go that route. And also, I would, you know, you might think about really, so is this near your house at all? Or your...
Well, my house, it's probably, 100 yards, maybe 125 yards to where I'm planning on putting it. And like I said, do you need to moldboard plow it or something?
No.
Get it turned up good?
Yeah, no, actually, what one of the methods that I think actually works really well if you're starting new beds, and this is probably actually pretty good soil at this point. But what I would think of is it's actually something called lasagna gardening, and I've used it quite a bit. But you don't till anything, because you always have to keep in mind every time you till, what you're doing is you're actually bringing up weed seeds. And that's like the last thing you want to do, is to bring up more weed seeds. And so you have to just let them stay down there. But what you want to do is, and you can check online, there's actually a book called Lasagna Gardening, but it's a fancy name for an old method called sheet composting. And basically what you're just doing is you're just layering over the existing material, you know, so you're not digging anything up. And so you can use wet cardboard, you can use wet newspapers, whatever it is. And then you just start layering with stuff that you already have or that you can get. So it'd be like compost, if you have any shredded leaves, and you just keep layering it to the point where maybe it's like even 10 or 12 inches above the ground. And then eventually that will all decompose, and then you just go ahead and just plant right into it. And when I say eventually, it usually just takes a couple months. I mean, if it's halfway, I like to do it in the fall so that it's ready to plant in the spring, but you could still do it and still do a summer planting now.
So I'm a little late to get started on this.
Yeah, but that's fine. That would be my recommendation, because the great thing is it adds a nice organic matter to the soil. You're not bringing up any weed seeds. Plus, it's just, in a lot of respects, it's a lot easier because you're not having to dig up all this stuff and you're not plowing it and just let all that stuff there. And then really think through on whether how much fencing you're going to have to do. And especially with deer, like you're just really going to have to think through on whether you really need, because obviously deer need a certain amount of height when it comes to fencing. But there are some things you can do. And actually, the University of Nebraska has a really nice website that talks about wildlife, as well as U of I Extension has a good website on talking about wildlife and living with wildlife. So you might check those websites, and they really give you some indication on how tall the fences need to be and what direction you want to go that route.
But I also, this ground right now has gypsum and burdock and every kind of wild weed you can imagine on it. You don't have to.
I would mow it low. I would mow it low.
Mow it low.
Mow it as low as you can.
Okay.
And then start doing this lasagna gardening or sheet composting, whatever you want to call it. And just let those seeds, let those weeds just stay low.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. And thank you. Let's go straight ahead to our next caller, Shelley in Champaign. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Hi. Good morning. Hey, question about my lawn. We have somebody come mow it, and we have a quote lawn service end quote who will like put little holes in it once a year or something, and they put like weed, and then sometimes they'll put fertilizer on it. My yard looks nothing like a couple neighbors down. Their yard is lush, beautiful, green. What do I need to do?
I think a couple things. I mean, there could be any number of reasons why their lawn looks lush and green. I don't know if it's newly sodded, or is this your lawn's fairly old? It's been around for a while?
It could be. It was here when we got the house like 5 years ago.
Okay. So part of it is maybe just how they started out. So you're just looking, your concern is the weed issues, or you just feel like it's not as thick as it should be?
It's not green and gorgeous like the neighbors a few down. I mean, it's, you know, a few sparse spots maybe.
Okay. Well, this is actually a good time to be thinking about reseeding. April is a wonderful month to reseed lawns. And what you can do is that you don't have to necessarily start all over again. You can do something, and if you already have a company, they can probably do this for you. It's called slit seeding.
Okay.
And it actually is just this machine that goes along and makes slits in the side and then drops seed down in. And it's a great way to sort of thicken up the lawn. Or if there's individual spots, sometimes you can just do some spot seeding, but try to thicken up the lawn. And whenever you thicken up the lawn, it generally means you have less weed problems. Anytime you have an open lawn, you're going to get more weeds coming in.
So if I do spot seeding, do I have to, like, rake up the ground
yep.
and put new dirt down?
Yeah, you want to make sure it's just like planting lettuce seed or anything else. You want to make sure that you have good seed-to-soil contact. So you're going to have to take like a garden rake or something like that. And so if it's just small spots, you might just do it yourself. Just take a garden rake, you know, those hard tine types of rakes, and just rake it up. And then go ahead and put the seed in, and then usually tamp it down so it gets, again, so good contact with the soil. Make sure you keep it moist. That's always a big thing with seeds, just making sure that you keep it moist. So you may end up watering it at least once a day, if not a couple times a day, depending on how warm and windy it is. And do that, and as I said, April is a great month to do that. Thicken up the lawn, and then start making some determinations. Because, depending on what the neighbor is and what they're doing, and I'd also say if they're watering. And I think we also have to really think through on, you know, what's you know, how much input do you really want into your lawn, and what's a realistic expectation of what lawns should look like, I guess is the other part, too.
So we do water a lot. Our water bill was pretty big last year.
Yeah, so that might be one of those things. And, you know, we always have to keep in mind that, you know, for Kentucky bluegrass and cool season grasses, they just naturally go dormant in the summer. They want to go dormant. So you kind of have to decide if, you know, if you're going to water, then you have to continually water or just let it go dormant and then let it green up again in the fall. So
on this spot seeding, do I need to pick up the old grass and stuff that I rake up?
Well, I would just, as long as it's not like really sort of covering up the grass, as in, you know, smothering it out, it depends on how thick it is. But usually you can just rake it up enough, throw it in the compost pile, and really not have to do a lot. As far as, you just don't want big, you know, clumps of grass that might cover up the lawn and actually keep it from growing, if that makes sense.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Shelley. And we are on Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking about lawn and garden care with Sandy Mason from the U of I Extension. And we're paying special attention today to native plants with Master Naturalist Sherry Snyder, who heads up the Illinois Prairie chapter of Wild Ones. Sherry, I heard the phrase invasive ornamentals. What do we mean when we say that?
I guess what I think of as invasive ornamentals are those plants that are not indigenous to the area in which they're growing. For instance, here in Illinois, Japanese barberry can be considered an invasive ornamental. We had it on our property in our landscaping when we first moved to our house, and as we're wandering through the woods and getting to know our property, we're finding it all through the woods. It doesn't belong in the woods. It's displacing our native plants. So that's what I would consider an ornamental that can become invasive.
And something that just sort of gets out of control. It was brought in to look pretty, and then it sort of went all over the place?
That's exactly right. And I think the bigger concern is when you live in an area that you are near a natural area. You know, in town, there's probably not a whole lot of place for it to escape to. But if you live in an area like we do out in the country, and there's natural areas around that it can invade, that's when you need to be really careful.
I'm wondering, because we can take a lot for granted, especially in urban areas, what's a non-native plant and what is native? Are there some plants that perhaps we wouldn't necessarily consider an invasive or non-native plant, but actually is?
The generally accepted explanation for a native plant is a plant, you know, let's say here in central Illinois, if you were that first explorer that came across the prairie on horseback and you wrote down all the plants that you saw at that time 200 years ago, that would be considered indigenous or a native plant to central Illinois. Those are the plants that have evolved here. They've evolved with the animals, the insects, and, you know, the whole life cycle. So those are what's considered native. And what's native here in central Illinois may not be native in southern Illinois or northern Illinois. Just because of the difference in the climate, difference in soil.
Okay. Well, I'm wondering, here in central Illinois, if you wanted to start with encouraging a native plant in your own garden, what would you start with?
There are lots and lots of native plants. I think the place you need to start is knowing your garden, because like any plant, a native plant, some plants prefer full sun. Some prefer part sun. Some prefer a lot of moisture. Some are good in droughts. So you really need to know your planting bed and then match up the native plant with that planting bed for the most success.
What has been the situation in your own garden as you've been building up your native plants?
Well, we have very little sun because we live in a wooded area. So I take full advantage of what sun we have, and I've planted a lot of prairie full sun type plants, which also tend to be some of your more drought tolerant plants. We have a lot of shaded area as well, and I'm still struggling with the dry shade as to what native plants grow best there. I have a couple ferns that I just love, and I was surprised to find out that the ferns were a little bit more hardy than some of the other things that I'd tried there.
You know, I'm wondering, I guess I have a preconceived notion, and maybe it's just the choices that other gardeners have made, that when I think of native plants, I think of something that looks like a prairie. So I think of something that looks a little wilder.
Mm-hmm.
And also the choice of colors a little more subdued. If you want if you want something more like that English classic English country garden look, or you want bright colors, can you do that with native plants?
You know, I am not a landscape designer, but there are a lot of things that you can do with native plants to keep them from looking wild. You know, one of the things, and some of the things that I've tried at home, is if you plant your native plants, say, in an area where they will be contained. For instance, I have an area between the sidewalk that leads up to our front door and the kitchen window. That area is completely surrounded by driveway, sidewalk, and the house. So I can put the plants in there, I can put them where I want them, and, you know, they're going to stay looking fairly nice. They do reseed, so that's something that you need to consider. Now, I don't mind that, because if they reseed, that means I've got a nice native plant there and not a weed. As far as the color, I would say I would not call them subdued. It seems like there are seasons of the year when there are certain colors that are going on, but, you know, we've got the purples, the yellows, bright reds. The butterfly weed is bright orange and just a very attractive plant. You've got, you know, whites, and I would say that my plantings are far from subdued looking as far as color goes. And the way I have them planted is that I can keep, I have them planted so there's something blooming year-round. With perennials, they're, you know, some of them have 2 weeks, maybe 2 months bloom season, and then they're going to seed. But with the natives, you can find something that's blooming in every season throughout the summer, spring and summer and fall.
And Sherry, don't you think it is one of those things that you really have to think about your own sensibilities? And for some folks, those kind of wilder looking areas people love, and some people just don't really care for that look. But the nice thing is there's so many native plants that are like the butterfly weed, and that really look very, you know, I would say just very, you know, they don't look wild. They just look like beautiful perennials. And so people can kind of think through that on how sensitive they are and what kind of look they want. But I would think, and I was just thinking of that prairie gentian or that deep blue color.
Oh.
It's hardly, mm-hmm. Or blazing stars, or, you know, wonderful purple. And so there's lots of colors. And I think if people sort of figure out what their desire is and whether they want that wilder garden or not, I think there's certainly native plants to fit everybody's desires.
I agree completely. One of the things you can do, too, is if you like that little bit wilder look or more of a prairie look, but maybe your neighbors don't.
Yeah, that's the other part, isn't it?
Yeah, you can build an island, you know, in, you know, say, your backyard or even your front yard, depending on what you're comfortable with, and have that be wild-looking where, you know, there's all a huge variety of plants and there's, you know, really a little bit of a chaotic look. But then calm it down around the borders. When you get down to the borders, you can plant a native grass called Northern Prairie Drop Seed. It's a beautiful, fountainy-looking grass with needle-thin leaves. Wild petunia is another nice little border plant. It stays low. It has a long bloom time for a perennial. It does reseed, though, so if you don't want it to reseed, you might want to rethink that one. But there's just some nice low plants. Prairie alum root is a native heuchera or a native coral bell that forms a nice little mound with its scalloped leaves that would make a nice edging. So you can have your wild and then kind of calm it down so it doesn't look as wild to your neighbors or passersby.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and the subject is lawn and garden care. We're talking with master naturalist Sherry Snyder, who's here to answer your questions about incorporating native plants into your gardening. And also with us is U of I Extension horticulturalist Sandy Mason, our regular monthly guest for these lawn and garden care shows. We welcome your questions at 333-9455 and 800-222-9455, or you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. And we're on Facebook and Twitter at Focus 580. Yes, Sandy.
I think the great thing is there are lots of resources out there. And actually, U of I Extension has a publication called Using Native Plants in the Home Landscape. And it gives you even sort of these, I want to say cookie cutter, but that's not necessarily a bad idea, as in, okay, if you have, if you want to do a small mound or island bed, these are the native plants that you could use. And they would look good. They would do well in a landscape situation, but they're all native plants. So looking for those resources. So that's one book certainly U of I Extension has. And Sherry, just some wild ones, don't you guys have? I've seen some beautiful pictures, and I know that have come through wild ones. Do you have some resources on the on your websites? And
yeah, there are some resources on the website, which is wildones.org. I have the plant book that you were just talking about, The Native Plants in the Home Landscape. That's an excellent book. You know, this guy's talking about plants that he has experience with that aren't as wild thinking, you know, looking as you may think. And then, you know, he does have the another good one is a book by Patricia Hill. She is a landscape designer from Lyle, Illinois. She uses strictly native plants in her landscaping, and she does some gorgeous work. And she goes through the native plants. Now, you have to be a little bit careful because she's up in northeastern Illinois, and we may not have some of the same plants down here that are native, but she does the same thing that Keith Nowakowski does in his book from the U of I Extension, in that she provides some opportunities for if you have an island, if you have a slope, if you have a dry area.
Let me go ahead. We have another caller waiting. And I want to say hello to Dwayne in Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Good morning. This is a subject after my own heart, and I'm sure both of you are better qualified than I am to address a thought of mine. I've been involved with prairie restoration, and I've noticed, and I have a little island prairie in my yard, two of my particularly favorite flowers are goldenrod, some of the goldenrods and the New England aster.
Hmm.
But do you have any ideas about how to keep them neighborly? That is, both of them throw seeds to the wind. And I picked up a goldenrod from a salvage operation that turned out to be about as tall as I am, in contrast to a handsome little goldenrod that was about knee-high, summer blooming, just be a beautiful plant, I think. But they are so, they just reach out, goldenrods and just reach out in every direction, and both do with their seeds. But I just wonder, how do you keep them, how do you keep them in bounds besides pruning and so on? I'll let you talk. Thank you.
I don't have a lot of experience. This is Sherry. I don't have a whole lot of experience with the goldenrods. I'm going to try a showy goldenrod in my front yard this year. I've heard that it is not quite as aggressive as some of the other goldenrods. I'm not sure which ones you have.
Yeah, I think the one that maybe he's, and because I kind of came into this too, there's a Canadian goldenrod, and that's mm-hmm. usually that big one that you see growing along the ditch banks and stuff. And it not only reseeds, but it spreads by rhizomes, and it spreads like crazy by rhizomes. And so that was one that I had in my yard, and I did eventually start removing it simply because it was just really taking over the other plants. So I think that's a good example of that. You're trying the showy goldenrod. So there are other goldenrods besides that Canadian one that I think tends to be really, even though it's a native, it tends to be a little bit more weedy. So maybe selecting a different one might really help a lot when it comes to that. So that would be one thing I think I would think of, because there's what, rigid goldenrod? There's several goldenrods out there.
Yeah, rigid is the other one that is recommended for home landscaping.
Right.
But I don't have
right.
experience with either one of them.
Yeah. So it really is. I think that's part of it, maybe, because, and goldenrod is one of those, and I think we always have to throw out there is the fact that people think of goldenrod, they think of hay fever, but that's not true. We know that's not true. That's really coming from ragweed and not goldenrod. So goldenrod's not an issue with hay fever, so we always have to keep that in mind. And then, so I think you're dealing with sort of the, I think if you sort of get rid of that one necessarily that runs by rhizomes, that might help. But then the seeds weeds are another issue. Now, I'm kind of with Sherry. I kind of like when they sort of spread their love around and you end up with all these seedlings. It's kind of fun, but I realize sometimes that can be, a little bit too much love there. So maybe deadheading might be one thing, and I know that's one more thing to do in the garden, but it might be some of those where you just sort of enjoy the flowers, let the insects do what they can do. But then as those flowers start to fade, you have to remove some of those, and that would, by deadheading, you can get rid of some of those seeds, those potential seeds at least. So other than that, I'm not sure what else you can do along those lines.
Well, this is Focus on, it's the second Tuesday of the month. We're talking lawn and garden care on today's program. Our experts in the studio are horticulture expert Sandy Mason with the U of I Extension and master naturalist Sherry Snyder of the Illinois Prairie Chapter of Wild Ones, who has information about native plants. We'll talk more and take more questions from you after a short break. This is Focus. This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. Our subject today is lawn and garden care, and our guests are Sandy Mason here from the U of I Extension and Sherry Snyder. She's the president of the Illinois Prairie Chapter of Wild Ones, a group devoted to native plants. Now, if you go to our website at will.illinois.edu/focus, you'll find links to both the U of I Extension, particular Sandy Mason's page, and also to Wild Ones. They both have events coming up. And Sherry, if I could ask you first about the program that your group is holding on Monday.
Yeah, that's right. We have Cindy Eck, who has her own private landscaping business in town where she tries to use native plants and sustainable landscaping techniques. She's going to be talking about that exact thing, some of the experiences that she has had and some suggestions for incorporating natives into your yard. You know, it doesn't have to be wild. It doesn't have to be all native. She'll talk about how you can start getting some natives into your yard and some sustainable practices for your landscaping.
Does that require some sort of sign up in advance?
No. Actually, the program is free and open to the public. It's at 7 o'clock on Monday, and it's at the McLean County Extension Auditorium.
Okay. And, Sandy, you have a program coming up on March 21st at the Extension Auditorium in Champaign.
Yes, absolutely. It doesn't sound nearly as much fun as the program Sherry's doing, but this is a really important program. This is actually called a first detector program when we're really looking at forest tree pests. And the idea with this program is actually from 9 to 3, March 21st at 801 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign at the U of I Extension office. And the whole idea is that when we start, the problem is with a lot of times when we have maybe weeds that have come in or plants that have come in, we don't really know enough about them, so they take hold faster than what we would like, and then we're trying to sort of clean up the mess later. The idea of this is a first detector program, trying to train people on what to look for, and we're doing a couple things. A couple weeds that we're concerned about that are unfortunately starting to come into different areas, Japanese stilt grass and giant hogweed, and sort of giving people a better idea on how to identify those. So if they do come under their property, they know how to deal with them, but also to let people know that they found them in their area. But also even some disease issues. There's a disease, unfortunately, that we're seeing in certain areas of the country called thousand canker disease of black walnut. And black walnut's a very important tree in our forested areas as well as a lumber tree. And this could be a very devastating disease. So how do you recognize that? So that's what this program is all about, is really teaching people how to recognize these things. And it's for arborists, it's for master naturalists, master gardeners, anybody that's interested in trees, tree care professionals. So it's March 21st. It's a Thursday. There is a $25 fee. They can go to the U of I Extension website for Champaign County and get registered for that. So it's going to be a great program, and I think it's really important to get more people out there that know what to look for when it comes to issues, when it comes to trees.
Well, we're talking about lawn and garden care on Focus this morning, and I want to go to our next caller, David in Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Hello. In regard to the goldenrods, what's your opinion of fireworks?
fireworks goes on.
Fireworks?
Yeah.
Oh, a type of cultivar.
Yeah, it's a cultivar. I actually really like fireworks. It is a beautiful cultivar, and I think it's really is one of those that it looks just like what it sounds. When it flowers, it actually looks like fireworks coming out. Now, you know, there's always this debate within folks, and maybe Sherry probably has an opinion about this as well, is we always wonder about these cultivars. If they're a cultivar of a native plant, are they still a native plant?
And to define cultivar.
Cultivar is a cultivated variety, as in someone that has made a selection within the green industry, has made a selection of this particular plant, and they said, this is really a great plant. Now we're going to divide it and basically make more clones of the same plant. So it's
so
a cultivated variety.
You're breeding a plant, and is it still wild?
Yeah, so there's always that debate, even though it's a cultivar, cultivated variety, so it's a special selection of a native plant, is it still a native plant? So there's still lots of discussion about that. Personally, I think it's a great garden plant. It doesn't, the clump gets bigger every year. It doesn't seem to be terribly invasive at all, at least that's been my experience. And so I think it has a lot of things going for it. So it's really one of those on how purists might not consider it to be a native plant.
Sherry, where do you
stand on that?
you're right. It is kind of controversial, and I don't think there is a definite answer yet. One of the points of view that's being taken, though, is instead of looking at the plant as the cultivar as to whether it is invasive or whether it behaves in the garden or not, is does it act like the native plant from an insect's point of view, from a bird's point of view, and they're learning more and more about this. There are some, just say a coreopsis, for example, where we've made them more beautiful and fuller by having like three or four rows of petals instead of one. And they're finding that some of these types of plants is the insects, the pollinators, get confused. They can't find what they're looking for on that plant, even though it's a cultivar of a native. So my personal opinion is that some cultivars are probably fine, but I think we need to look at each one on an individual basis, and I don't know how long it would take to do that, just to see if it's playing the same role in nature as the native. And if it's not, if the insects can't find the pollen in it, or they can't find the nectar, or they can't do the pollination, then it's probably not the best from nature's point of view.
So what is a collar? So, David, what do you think of fireworks?
Well, my experience has been much as you state. It doesn't seem to spread rapidly. I planted it 3 or 4 years ago, and it is perhaps three times the size that it was and probably ready to break up. Mm-hmm. I haven't observed any seedlings, so I rather wonder if it may be sterile, which would be great as a display plant. I like the blossom habit. I think it blooms heavier than the wild.
I think it does too.
Goldenrod, and the blossoms come off almost horizontally rather than vertically, which I enjoy.
Yeah, and it may be just what Sherry was saying on how much the flower itself has been manipulated, either through hybridization or selection or whatever. And I have a feeling on that one. It looks I see a lot of insects on it, so but that doesn't mean that it's a perfect thing. But I think that is probably a really good point on how much has the flower been manipulated from that native plant. And if it hasn't been manipulated all that much, then maybe it is, you know, still a nice one that we can use, and the pollinators and the insects can still use it the way they need to stay alive.
It does seem to attract pollinators.
Mm-hmm. I see all kinds of little things on it, little wasps and things on it, so they must be enjoying it.
Well, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the comment. That's
thank
great.
You, David. I had a question about, Sherry, I was wondering particularly about native plants in the context of lawns, and I don't know what commonly gets used for the sort of lawn that you mow in America. Does it use usually native grasses, or is it something else?
Restate that question. I'm not sure I caught it.
When we're talking about lawns, just the sort of green lawn that you mow and the sort of common grasses that people usually plant, are those often native grasses or not? And would native grasses work in that sort of context?
They are typically not native grasses, and the natives that I'm familiar with would not necessarily work in a lawn. Most of the natives that are prairie plants, like our big blue stem, little blue stem, prairie drop seed, are what they call clump grasses, where instead of forming a sod and a continuous a layer of grass, they form clumps. So there's, you know, a clump of grass here and a clump of grass over there with, you know, dirt or whatever in between them. So they aren't necessarily good for lawn. Actually, you know, in the native plant community, our idea is to reduce the amount of lawn.
Is that what you've done on your property?
Yes, yes. Well, actually, one of the things we did was our lawn is a no-mow lawn. It is not a native lawn, but the one good aspect of it is that it doesn't require mowing, you know, maybe once or twice a year.
It just doesn't grow very high.
Right. It kind of grows, you know, 4 or 5 inches and then flops over. It has a real soft texture. I mean, as far as walking in it barefoot, it feels great. We had to mow it for the first couple years, but we weren't mowing the grass. We were mowing the weeds. But it seems now that the lawn is taking hold and there are fewer and fewer weeds, so, you know, we could mow it once or twice a summer. And, you know, just reduce all that pollution from, you know, the mowing and all the time that it takes to do that as well. So, although it is not a native grass.
So do you know what the grass is?
It's
like a fescue or something?
Fescues,
yeah. And I will say one of the things within the green industry, they are looking at buffalo grass, which isn't native for us in Illinois, but it's native to North America. It's native to the shortgrass prairies along the plains states. So there is certainly some interest within the green industry sort of looking at those shorter grasses that would be native, not native here, but certainly native to North America. So,
and that would
and
be,
making selections for those.
And that would be short in the matter of it would just naturally not require much mowing.
Right. It wouldn't require as much mowing, but it could be mowed. And still, if people want to have a native grass, but yet have it mow it periodically, like what Sherry was talking about.
But it's not going to be the sort of surface that you'd say work on your putting or something.
Probably not. I'm not sure they've gotten quite that far. So I guess but that does bring up a good point on how you use your lawn. And it sounds great what Sherry's doing, which is sort of just mow it periodically and just keep down the weeds or whatever.
Yeah, and like I mentioned, we. As I have time, we chop into the lawn, and we keep extending the native planting beds further and further.
The lawn's days sound numbered.
That's right. Not entirely. I mean, there is a purpose for lawn. You know, if you've got children and you want a play area, the lawn is perfect for that. You know, lawn would make a nice path, you know, from native plant bed to native plant bed. So we'll probably still always have some lawn, but it won't be acres and expanses of lawn, that's for sure.
I was wondering, and first of all, before I go off on that tangent, let me remind you that you still have time to ask Sandy Mason and Sherry Snyder about lawn and garden care and the use of native plants. Here on Focus, you can call in at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. The phone number again, 333-WILL, or toll-free at 800-222-WILL. I know we're talking about all the things that are going to get planted. Right now there's still snow out there. It is early March, but even before things get planted, are the things, Sandy, that people should be out doing right now with their yards and gardens?
Well, I think this is a perfect time to really be thinking about pruning. So if you have some trees, shrubs that need to be pruned, this is a great time to do that because hopefully we get into a little bit warmer weather where you feel like you can get out and do that. And you can do that even in the snow, right? You can still prune your trees and shrubs even if they get some snow on them. So that would be probably the one thing, really sort of looking at the trees. If you need to do some pruning, this would be a great time to do that. Maybe you have some shrubs that need to be really need to be rejuvenated. You might think about that. As far as, you know, maybe some of the pink, you know, if you have, like, obviously these are not native, but things like pink spirea and some of those that really need to be rejuvenated periodically. I love to cut down my red twig dogwood every 3 or 4 years. It looks so much better. Redder stems, those kind of things. So you certainly can get out and do those things this time of year.
Are there weeds that are coming up now, maybe getting a head start and everything else that you'd want to go through?
Yeah.
The ground
once the snow melts, you may find there are actually some weeds under there. You know, chickweed's a good example of a weed that actually is a winter annual, so it actually loves cold weather. Often it'll germinate in late in the fall and then really gets going really very early in the season, even before we've even thought about getting out there and doing any kind of weeding. So chickweed is certainly one that's out there. Henbit's another one that's kind of in that same category. So if you feel like you want to get out and do a little, plus it's just nice to kind of get your gardening bones going in the springtime to do a little weeding early, I guess, if those are the kinds of things that you're concerned about.
Sherry, I was wondering if the sort of things that are traditionally seen as weeds, are they native plants or are they invasive?
You know, actually, a lot of the weeds are not from, that were not growing here when the pioneers crossed Illinois. So a lot of them are invasive.
How about chickweed?
I am not familiar with chickweed. Sandy might be able to answer that.
I don't know if it's native or not, to tell you the truth. That's a really good question. I know it's actually edible, and people have told me that the young, you can use it. And actually, years ago, they considered it wonderful because it was like the first greens you can get when you didn't really have a lot of greens available to you. So that would be one thing. I don't know. That's a really good question. We'll have to check that one out as far as whether that's native or not. But I have a feeling, just what Sherry said, for a lot of the weeds, what we might consider to be weeds, are actually not native. They're ones that really love to take over. But then there are a few plants out there that are weeds but are native. So things like ragweed is a native plant.
Right.
So it's out there, and we may not think it's a great plant, but it's a native plant, and it does its job. You know, their job is to go out there in those disturbed area and be those first plants that sort of colonize those areas and stabilize those areas so their plants can come in later. So they actually have a purpose. We may not think of it that way.
Let's go ahead and take another call. Good morning, Marilyn, calling in from Urbana. You're on Focus.
Hi there. You've been talking about pruning, and I'm wanting to add some understory native shrubs and stuff to my place. And I keep hearing that, oh, fall is the best time to plant them. But if I wait till fall, then I don't know where to put the native forbs that I want to put in. Do I have to wait till fall? What do you advise?
Well, from my point of view, I don't have to worry a whole lot about shrubs because our area is pretty natural to begin with. Mm-hmm. But what I've been told is that spring is the second best time to plant shrubs.
Okay.
So I would go with that.
Okay. And at the Wild Ones plant sale that you're having later today, I just got off of your website.
Oh, yeah.
But I didn't look at the items that you have. Will you be having native shrubs there?
Yes, we do, and we do have the list on the website, on our chapter website, which, as Jim mentioned, can be accessed from the WILL page. This is our tentative list, and hopefully we will be able to get them. We have them ordered, but, you know, sometimes the things don't grow as they should, and the people that provide these for us don't always have them for us. But a tentative list is out there. The shrubs and understory trees we'll have available. And I'm sorry, I don't know what they are off the top of my head.
Okay. All right. Sandy, you mentioned, buffalo grass.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any expectation that a strain of buffalo grass will be available in the Illinois area that will be successful?
Well, I know out at the U of I turf farms, they're actually looking at a number of different cultivars of buffalo grass and seeing how well they would do in a more of a landscape situation. So I think eventually it'll come. Now, whether you can get them locally is always the other issue with those guys. So I think that maybe we're still going to have to probably go outside and, you know, do catalogs and do online ordering and stuff. I don't know if anybody locally is going to end up having those. But I know it's certainly been looked at, and I'm sure you can get buffalo grass, and I would hope here soon we could actually have some cultivars that could be really good for the area. And the nice thing is, you know, buffalo grass is a tough grass, and I guess that's the big thing about, you know, Kentucky bluegrass is beautiful, and we talk about how lush it is, but really overall, really for it to be lush, it needs water, it needs some fertilization, those kind of things. But so what are other grasses that we could do that don't require that kind of input? So I think that is one of those good points, too.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, both of you.
Thank you, Marilyn. And let's go on to our next caller, also in Urbana. Good morning, Mike. You're on Focus.
Hi. I just have a quick question, actually a recommendation, please. I have a shaded patio area, and I'm not a gardener. I live in a condominium, but I would like to get some recommendation for some plants that would do well out there in the summertime for flowering plants or whatever for container gardening. And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Thank you, Mike. Container gardening.
Well, I think for one of those things, I would, especially in those shady environments, sometimes you really need some things that are going to brighten things up. And so I would really kind of look for things. You know, there's some great coleus now that I think are just, they're obviously not native, but they're beautiful with just some really like chartreuse leaves and just some fantastic leaf coloration to them. It's just beautiful plants. So I am a big believer in coleus. There are also some great new begonias that I think, there's one called Bonfire, and there's actually a newer one whose name escapes me right now, but there's some new begonias, and they're calling them sort of angel wing begonias, but they have a little bit different leaf than what we might typically think of, but they're fabulous in containers, and they just bloom and bloom and bloom their little hearts out. So I think there's some great begonia. I would look toward begonias and coleus, and I think those would be ones that provide lots of instant color, and certainly the begonias just flower their little hearts out. So some really nice selections, I think, out there on shaded. So you can go beyond impatience, I guess. People always often think of impatience, but you can go beyond that.
Sherry, does that question apply with native plants as well?
You know, I don't know that I have any good answers for that. I haven't tried growing the natives in containers, for one thing. There is one little native plant, though, that I was just so surprised to find that adds color in shade, and that is called fire pink. It's just a simple little, it looks like a five-pointed star, the flower, but it is bright red. It grows in the shade. It tolerates dry. Mine bloomed, you know, this summer. They don't have a real long bloom time because they are a perennial, so they'll bloom, you know, maybe 3 to 4 weeks. But the hummingbirds love them, so that's another added benefit.
Okay. We have just a couple of minutes, and we have one more call on the air. Good morning. You're on Focus.
I don't know if this will clear up the matter of chickweed, but I believe it's considered something of a delicacy in the Middle East, used for thickening soups and such. But I seem to recall something about cultivar the Native Americans had, which had a much larger seed and was very high in protein. Unfortunately, it was lost as a domestic crop about the time corn was introduced to the Midwest, which was very unfortunate because it was a far superior food crop.
And easy to grow, I would think, since chickweed seems to grow quite crazy.
I should think so, but it's no longer extant, if my memory is correct.
So it must be a native plant then, obviously.
Well, it sounds that way. Yeah. It must be widely distributed throughout the world, apparently.
Well, that's certainly good. Yeah, that makes sense, too.
But this would place it back. I think corn was introduced to the Midwest about 700 years ago, but I might be off on that. So it couldn't have been an introduction. So, for what it's worth.
Thanks.
Thank you very much, caller.
Yeah, it goes back to what I always say. If you can't beat them, eat them.
Sherry, are you growing any crops with your native plants? Are you staying on the decorative side?
Well, as I mentioned, we don't have a whole lot of sun. So the little area that I have in sun, we have put in prairie-type native plants. I was just talking to my husband this past week about putting in, and I took some notes on your lasagna gardening idea there, Sandy. Along the side of our driveway, there's a little bit of sun there that I don't have anything else planted in. I might have to try to grow some typical vegetable garden stuff there.
Great. Good.
I suppose mushrooms might be an option, but they're sort of hard to plant, aren't they?
Oh, well, we have those in the woods.
Yeah, so. She doesn't have to plant those.
But I'm not telling you where.
Well, we've been talking about lawn and garden care today on Focus with our guests, Sherry Snyder with the Illinois Prairie Chapter of Wild Ones. And Sherry, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk about my favorite subject.
And again, let's note that program you have over at the McLean County Extension Office on Monday. And you can find out more about that at our website at go over to will.illinois.edu/focus and look up today's show, and you'll find the link. You'll also find a link to the U of I extension and Sandy Mason's page as well. Thank you both for being with us on the show today on Focus.
Thank you.
We welcome any additional thoughts you have today about today's program on our website at will.illinois.edu/focus. And if you know anyone who might enjoy hearing Focus who lives outside of our listening area, let them know we stream this program live every day at will.illinois.edu, where you can also listen back to literally years of past programs. Focus is also available as a free downloadable podcast. To sign up, visit the Focus page of our website, will.illinois.edu/focus. On Monday's show, my guest is Nobel laureate Jody Williams. She was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1997 for her campaign to ban landmines. That work is part of a lifetime of activism for Williams, which she describes in her new book. That book is called My Name is Jody Williams, and a Vermont girl's winding path to the Nobel Peace Prize. So again, that's Nobel laureate Jody Williams, my guest Monday on Focus. Coming up Tuesday on Focus, we'll be talking a little bit about the passing of Venezuelan leader Hugo Chavez. That's in the first half hour of Focus on Tuesday. Today's program produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director and handles your calls. I'm Jim Meadows.